This is the Sean Salisbury Show.
You better run, you smart aleck.
Who is it, Brad?
Just a bunch of punks who better watch their back.
Follow the show on Twitter at S. Salisbury Show.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
From the SB Nation Radio Studios in Houston, with the Bench Warmers, here's Sean Salisbury.
All right, we'll do the fifth one. We'll be the USA in the World. Oh, that's right.
So, is this?
I guess my plane ticket to Russia.
Yeah, I was gonna say, does this mean we don't get to go to Russia?
Yeah, plane ticket to Russia.
Well, can we go and cheer for Trinidad and Tobago?
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did they qualify?
Just Trinidad.
I don't even know if they qualify.
I'm on the Belgium bandwagon. They performed well at the last World Cup. I'm all Belgium now.
I'm gonna go with one of the ones who's actually gonna win.
Well, Belgium's gonna
an opportunity. Belgium will not win the World Cup.
Okay, but here's
American. Country.
Here's what's disappointing to me.
It's Argentina. Fairly qualified.
South America, but that's okay. They'll up their game when this time is right. USA got a... Oh, my bad.
Here's the thing that upsets me.
Canada.
It's one thing...
Save that for hockey.
Iceland.
That's a winter. That's the Winter Olympics, okay?
It's one thing to not perform well once you get there, but it's another thing that you don't even get invited to the party.
How about Fox? I think they spent a couple $100 million on the rights to the English
part. It's their first time, right?
To televise the English side of the World Cup. We're not
Oops.
Going.
And by the way, Max tells me Trinidad and Tobago did not qualify.
So. Nah.
I'm not even watching them.
Yeah.
So they just played spoiler.
So you're telling me Trinidad and Tobago took us out.
And they
didn't we beat them a month ago? Weren't we talking about it on the show? Didn't we beat Trinidad and Tobago earlier in this thing?
I think so.
I think we did. Remember? We were talking about it on the show. Trinidad and Tobago. Okay?
Ended the dreams.
Man.
Wamp, wamp.
That just blows.
But so do you really care? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, my plane ticket to Russia now. I couldn't put my 3 years of Russian in college to work. I can't go now. Well, I guess I could.
What
I was
going
to wear a USA jersey.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
Is it Pulisic or Pulisic?
I don't know. That's not what you were saying.
Christian, I was going to put it on. I was going to wear his jersey.
I have no idea.
Can I still wear his jersey?
No.
I can't?
Not after they don't
I'm
going to
get
qualify.
One that fits like Phil Mickelson's golf shirt. You know what I mean? That really tight. I'm going to wear one of those. Christian, is it Christian Pulisic or Pulisic? You're a soccer guy. Hey, coming up on the show, Phil Shane, BN soccer analyst, been covering USA soccer for 20 plus years. We're going to break down our power rankings. We got some it's overs, NFC QB switch. We're going to take the quarterbacks and move them around each division, and how would those teams be, and what would it look like to you then? We'll have some Ash on, and Casey Smith going to join us talking Boston sports.
The Sean Salisbury Show continues now with the Bench Warmers. Here's Sean Salisbury.
Yeah, BN Sports, we're fortunate now to be joined. Disappointing for a lot. We're going to find out just how disappointing it is for this man and for U.S. soccer. Phil Shane, BN soccer analyst, covered USA soccer for decades now, joins us here on the Sean Salisbury Show. Phil, welcome. We appreciate you spending time with us after what was a difficult day and night yesterday.
It has been. It's been very emotional, a bit of a roller coaster, but it is a pleasure to be with you, Sean.
We appreciate it. Well, let me ask you this first, my friend. You've covered this a long time. You know, people that didn't watch or don't watch soccer or that do but didn't see the game for whatever reason, and you go on social media today and then everybody cares. Do we really care about this?
To a point, I think it's more than just arguing over why we didn't win the gold in the biathlon every 4 years. In some ways, this could be a huge opportunity. It is an obstacle. It is disappointing. But it's also the chance to reassess, regroup, move off perhaps in a slightly different direction, and perhaps make things better. So I think that there is a much greater awareness of the United States soccer team today, just maybe not exactly in the way they would have liked.
Yeah, maybe more in loss than in victory. Maybe we've taken it for granted. So, Phil, you're passionate about soccer. You do a great job of covering it and have for a long time, and I know you love it. So when this happened and we didn't qualify, Trinidad and Tobago takes care of it, what was your reaction initially to this loss now that you've had, you know, a handful of hours to soak it in?
Well, initially it's disbelief. And, I mean, I was looking at all the figures, the percentages, not necessarily Vegas odds, but all of the people that kind of funnily predicted that Hillary Clinton would be president were kind of saying the exact same thing. it was like maybe a 3% chance that the United States would be eliminated. Maybe worst-case scenario, they'd have to go into the playoff against Australia. And I'm just looking at this. Win and you're in. Draw and it's going to take nearly double digits in both games to knock you out. And then lose, and you'd still need to see two upsets. Panama and Honduras come away with victories. But the closer and closer, especially when you get to the halftime and you realize there's only a goal difference coming up, perhaps, that could make the difference for the United States in qualifying or not. And then they scored, and now you're one goal away. And then Panama scores, and it was like watching that truck slam into the bridge in slow motion, and you just knew it was going to be disastrous. And then you have that little lifeline at the end where Mexico has the free kick, and you think back 4 years ago where the United States, who didn't need to win but continued to push forward and scored two goals in injury time to knock out Panama and allow Mexico to stay alive. You're thinking maybe Mexico would return the favor, but the shot sails high, final whistle, and the ugly reality strikes. I mean, you can see, if you look back, you don't even need tea leaves. You can see the footprints of this going back a ways. You could even say decades, perhaps even after the 2002 success where they almost made it to the semifinals. But they kind of relied on the status quo. They stayed course. Even with Jurgen Klinsmann coming in, there weren't that many changes. But I think that this is an opportunity. And sometimes, I know in my personal life, and I know I'm not alone, sometimes you kind of have to hit rock bottom to bounce back up. It's a good foundation to build on. And I think U.S. soccer has hit rock bottom. Now, do they stay there or do they build a foundation for something better?
Those are the great pipes and insight from Phil Shane, BN soccer analyst, joining us here on the Sean Salisbury Show. Now, Phil, fill us in on this. I mean, a phantom goal, you know, there's been some rumblings about this Panama phantom goal. Is there any chance or is it a foregone conclusion that the U.S. won't get in because of this phantom goal and rumblings about an appeal?
Well, I think in the past you would believe anything is possible when it comes to FIFA, especially when money is concerned. And there were some reports in South America, I know specifically in Argentina, that said FIFA and CONCACAF were considering a replay. Basically what happened is there could have been a foul in the box, there could have been a penalty in the box, but bodies are flying left and right, the goalkeeper's over, the ball's heading towards the goal, but it comes off the post, never quite crosses, but there's such a horde of bodies blocking the referee's vision. He thinks it was in, then cleared, and then bounced away, but it never even came close to crossing. So was there a successful push towards Panama because of this? Absolutely. Does the United States deserve to go to the World Cup because Panama was lucky? Absolutely not. And again, it's wallpapering the Titanic at the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
This credit to Panama, they did what was needed. Maybe this is an argument more, again, for technology to come in and give the referee some help when he can't quite see. But should this throw the U.S. a lifeline? Absolutely not.
Phil, talk soccer fans off the USA ledge. Explain. Can you give some perspective on why this is not a disaster, even though right now it feels like it for USA?
Well, because in my mind, every single time the national team goes out, and even if it seems like a pipe dream, the goal should be take another step towards winning a World Cup. And in many ways, this seems like a huge step backwards. But in my mind, we were on the slow boat. This gives us a chance to maybe a year earlier, because the danger is the fact every other good coach worth his salt is either in the World Cup or fighting to get there. So in many ways, we're going to be treading water for the next year, year and a half, until after the 2018 World Cup, and then the U.S. can maybe go out and get its superstar to build this team. But this, again, is a chance to clear the decks, be it from Soccer House and the administrators who have put these machines in motion, maybe the coaching staff that goes all the way back pretty much to 2000. Maybe it's a chance to sweep out some of the 30-plus players, the guys. I mean, we had a 38-year-old goalkeeper who was a legend, maybe the best goalkeeper in the history of the United States national team. But this is a team that needed youth, and I think we saw it last night. This was a team that was flat, that needed passion. They knew what they needed to do. All they needed to do was to fight back, get one goal, and the nightmare is over. They're on their way to Russia. They could not do that. So, again, off the ledge will depend on what happens over the next 6 months. Sunil Gulati, who is the commissioner, the president of U.S. Soccer, has an election in 4 months. At the moment, I don't think he has a legitimate challenger that could threaten him. Sunil has done a lot of great things in his time in office, but it might be time to go. And I think all of those alternatives now look just a little better in hindsight, taking a look at what we just saw last night.
The great voice and great insight of Phil Shane, being soccer analyst here on the Sean Salisbury Show. Let me combine these two, and maybe it's kind of one in the same. Phil, what kind of effect will this have, not just on USA Soccer, on our World Cup qualifying and the men's team, but on soccer in general, from the 8-year-old to the 12-year-old to college soccer and to the future of USA Soccer? What kind of effect? And where do we go from here for both youth and our World Cup men's team?
Well, first of all, from development, some are saying they're pointing to pay to play. And if you have kids, you know how much it costs to put them on a soccer team.
For sure.
There's also the talk about promotion and relegation. In fact, U.S. Soccer is going to court in New York with the NASL later this week, I recall, to basically defend the fact that they have the right to establish what is the first division in soccer in this country. There are legal ramifications all around. Now, both of those, I think, could be huge steps towards the future. Would it have made a difference this time around? Absolutely not. Some people are saying that the next generation, the 6-, 7-, 8-year-old kids, won't have Pulisic in a World Cup uniform, and that's going to be another lost generation. Not necessarily. I mean, I grew up in the heyday of the NASL. Maybe they'll have a Lionel Messi poster up on their wall and wear a jersey just like they are. It's a missed opportunity. I think the real blow comes financially and maybe in worldwide prestige. I know the U.S. is pushing for the next World Cup after 2022, looking for 2026. This could be a bit of a black eye. There's talk about Fox losing at least $20 million when it comes to advertising revenues. I've seen other estimates from a U.S. soccer, that's a small s soccer, just the soccer community, conceivably seeing $250 million worth of investment one way or the other just poof, disappear because the U.S. national team wasn't there. Now, again, this is an opportunity still. What do we do with the opportunity? How do we get those kids involved? How do we turn them into more than just one Pulisic, but dozens of homegrown Christian Pulisics to choose from? Again, the future in my mind is still bright. The under-17 national team won its first two games in rather convincing style. They'll be back in action tomorrow morning, and I'll probably be up at 4:30 in the morning watching. But it would have been nice to look ahead towards Russia and root for the red, white, and blue. But in all honesty, what we saw in these past 4 years was rather blasé. It seemed to be settled. They were taking it for granted, and I don't think the U.S. would have done much once they got there. Black eye, absolutely. Slap in the face, yes. How do we respond? Because I think the future is still bright. We need to get the right guys in charge, Sean.
Okay, Phil, we got about 2 minutes, but I want to get these two questions in because your insight is needed here. Yeah, I'm giving you one change or one thing you want to see with our men's national team. What is it?
I want to see a different type of coach. Tab Ramos is the under-20 coach right now. Good guy, great player. Peter Vermees, former national team player, has done wonders in Kansas City. I don't like the style that they play. I think it's too boring. I think the American soccer fan, the American sports fan, wants to be dynamic, wants to be aggressive, wants to be on the front foot, wants to see a coach who isn't afraid to play younger players if they have the potential to be better. I look at Atlanta United, what Gerardo Martino, the former Barcelona Newell's Old Boys manager, has done in such a short period of time. I'd love to take Tata Martino. I just don't think he's ready to leave Atlanta, and I know Atlanta's not ready to let him go.
And a lot of doom and gloom today because of the USA loss, not by you but by others. But Christian Pulisic is pretty good. Is that something for us to hold on to?
It is, but this is a wasted opportunity. This was a chance for Christian Pulisic to explode on the world stage. What he's done at Borussia Dortmund and in the Champions League has been phenomenal. What he's done, I mean, he scored yesterday against Trinidad, has been fantastic. But this is a World Cup. It's not like in other sports, and you know, if you throw an interception late, there go the playoffs. Wait until next year.
I've done it, Phil.
This is wait until 4 years, and a lot of these guys won't be around in 4 years.
My man, this is great insight, something that none of us here can quite give. We may love soccer, but sure as heck not as much as you, and we're sure not as heck We don't have the insight you do, but man, you've brought some great perspective and to a day when most people are suffering over this, and we can't wait to have you join us again. And I'm sure you will be up at 4:30 watching those under 20. So join us again.
It sounds,
my man.
Strange. I'm watching young boys run around at 4:30 in the morning. It doesn't quite sound good.
Well, but it's still good soccer, and we need your insight. So we'll appreciate it, and we'll lean on it again. We appreciate it, Phil. Thank you.
Anytime, Sean.
Appreciate it. The great Phil Shane, being soccer analyst, giving us some great insight on, he looks like the glass is half full, and I like to hear that. In a time now, we got to sit back and wait. We're going to roll through Russia. Been since 1986, guys. Since we had a team not qualify for the World Cup. That was my rookie year in the NFL. Boy, is that a long time ago, like yesterday. We're coming back. Yeah, watch it,
Robin. I
was
not born yet.
Watch it, Robin. Watch it, and you watch it, Barrett. Coming up next, we got David Fucillo, right? We're going to get you – we're going to get fulfill your fantasies in football, okay? We're going to roll some fantasy questions at David as we do every week. It's the Sean Salisbury Show. It's right here on BN Sports.
This is the Sean Salisbury Show. Here are your hosts, the Benchwarmers and Sean Salisbury.
Well, it's a little time for fantasy. It's SBNation.com's David Fucillo as he joins us every week. Well, to hear for your every fantasy win when it comes to football. And what's been quite frankly, an awful, in my mind, brand of football this year. There's still some stars in it. And there's, quite frankly, some guys that have let us down. But guess what? David's going to tell us who to choose and who not to choose. David, welcome in, my man. It's good to have you on, as we do every week. Let's start with the Giants. They lost all four receivers last week. Obviously, Beckham gone for the year. I guess we're trying to find a player or two that can benefit, or we can benefit from, in fantasy on the Giants. Who is it?
Yeah, the Giants are a mess right now. All those injuries are just piling up. I think... If you're looking at somebody to catch the ball, Evan Engram this week, their rookie tight end, is an intriguing choice. He's been a little inconsistent thus far. He had no catches last week, but that came after four, five, and six catches. And they're facing a Broncos defense that, while solid against the pass, actually has struggled against tight ends. That's the one area they rank 26th in covering tight ends. So that's gonna be something to look at.
Real quick on this Giants thing, do they have the guts to start another quarterback at any point in time in the next 6 weeks?
I don't think they do. I think they are just going to – I think McAdoo is just going to ride it out and pray.
Yeah, he better pray hard, because they need a lot of help. He might need some help himself calling plays. Saints trade Peterson to the Arizona Cardinals, Adrian Peterson. He was the third best back in New Orleans, not a fit. He's going to start in Arizona. Any fantasy impact there, or is this just another guy?
He's a bye week guy. If you're short on running backs, because there's a lot of quality running backs that are going to be that aren't going to be playing this weekend and moving forward. He's a guy that's going to get some volume on the ground. Andre Ellington is going to get all the passing down snaps, so you're looking at a guy that'll get maybe two, three snaps per series if they're struggling there. So you're just hoping for some volume. But other than bye weeks, there's really no value for Adrian Peterson.
Okay, speaking of bye weeks, let's see the Bills. So there's no LeSean McCoy this week. The Bengals, A.J. Green type, if you had him, or a Joe Mixon. Cowboys, no Dak, no Zeke there on a bye week. And Seahawks, Russ Wilson, Seahawks defense. So all those are resting this week. Give us some sleeper starts for week 6.
Well, coming into this season, I never thought I would say it, but New York Jets quarterback Josh McCown might be one of my favorite starts this week, just because the Jets are rolling somehow, and they are facing a Patriots defense this year that is struggling. They have given up 300-plus passing yards every game. They're giving up the most fantasy points per game. I think Josh McCown actually could be a great start. And speaking of the Jets, Matt Forte, who could get some more snaps with Bilal Powell hurt, again, facing that Patriots defense that is putting up historically bad numbers. I think you're looking at a couple guys right there that might actually be worth the look.
Our fantasy guide, David Fucillo, SBNation.com. Joins us here on the Sean Salisbury Show. You trust Ben Roethlisberger fantasy-wise right now?
Not really. He's a guy I would be looking for other options. I don't think that I'm prepared to drop him at this point. I think that, if you look at his last couple games that have been actually pretty awful, he's faced Baltimore and Jacksonville. Those are solid defenses. They're really not, the slouches. So he gets the Chiefs this week. They're sixth in fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks. So, if you're shorthanded, if you can't find a decent bench option, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world to play him, but you got to definitely lower your expectations moving forward.
So you're wavering over whether you'd start him if he was your guy. Well, let me ask you this. In a keeper league or something, I mean, going forward, do you own him? Or is he a guy you're willing to part with? Just think about this. An MVP candidate just 2 years ago, now we're talking as if he's some just another guy.
Yeah, I mean, we heard him the other day talking about whether he's not even sure if he has it anymore, and confidence is as important as anything in professional sports, and if he doesn't have it, I think keeper league, long-term-wise, there's really little value in him at this point. He's going to start playing that Brett Favre game of will he, won't he retire, and I just think that it's time to move on from him in that kind of league. Now, in short-term leagues where you're just playing this year, I think you ride out the string with him a little bit.
Still worth owning. Okay, let's go to the Jacksonville Jaguars defense. I love them. But you're more you know more about this fantasy thing than I do. Are they worth a start and a keep, and they're your team on defense the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of great matchups moving forward. Right now they're the highest scoring defense in fantasy football. They've got 10 interceptions right now, 13 takeaways on the season. They're just rolling. I mean, their one bad game came against the Titans. They got absolutely blown out, and given the other four games, it's clear that that was the outlier here, that they're actually a very good defense. I mean, they've been investing so much. At some point, it had to pay off, and it seems like it finally is. So, yeah, they're a team that I'm prepared to start most every week.
Okay, who's your start of the week this week, your highest-scoring player? Who you love?
I mean, going with quarterback Drew Brees, I think is going to put up a huge game against the Lions. Detroit's playing some decent football, but Brees is finally back home, and I love seeing him play at home in the Superdome. I think behind him, Kareem Hunt. He had a decent game, but he had to work for his yards last week. But this week, he gets the Steelers at home, and the Steelers are struggling. I think that Kareem Hunt is going to bounce back with a big 120, 130-yard game.
Are we to the point now that we're going to start just this year? I'm talking about now, right now, that when we talk fantasy quarterbacks, that we need to start throwing Alex Smith into the Brady, Brees, Rodgers, when he was right, Roethlisberger talk when it comes to fantasy studs at quarterback?
At this point, I don't see why not. If you look at his numbers, his worst performance was 155 yards and two touchdowns. He's put up 250 or more the other four games, a couple 300-yard games. I mean, the big thing is he's not throwing interceptions, so you're not leaving points on the board. He's not losing points for you right away. For the time being, long-term, I don't know how long this will last, but, for this season, I think it's worth rolling him out there as one of the best quarterbacks in football.
Okay, which slow starter to the season at any position do you think is going to pick it up and expect a breakout, whether it's this week or as we move forward?
I think moving forward, LeSean McCoy, we were talking about how he's on bye. I think that'll give him a chance to get a little right. But then after that, he faces Oakland, he faces the Jets, the Saints, the Chargers, the Patriots. There's a lot of matchups there that I really like for him. I think that offense is struggling to get going. It's going to be interesting to see how long it takes Jordan Matthews to get back, but I think McCoy is going to be an integral part.
Okay, final question, David, just for a little bit of fun. I'm giving you 5 years, and you have to draft this guy, and he has to be your guy for the next 5 years. You can do nothing with him. Pick me a current quarterback in the NFL that you're willing to mortgage your NFL fantasy future on for 5 years.
Oh, Deshaun Watson, hands down. I absolutely, the passing game, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, but when you've got a guy that can also run with the ball and can make moves on the ground, the fantasy value is incredible. And, he's playing out of his mind. And sure, he's played some good defenses, some bad defenses. Part of the reason I like fantasy is that you can pick guys that you like and you just want to support because they're fun to watch. And Deshaun Watson is turning into one of those guys. And I like having a guy on my team long-term where it's like, you know what? I just like this guy. He's clearly going to produce. I just want to enjoy the ride.
Well, he's not only fun to watch, he's productive as all get out. This guy's a unique cat and special. David, great stuff, man. We'll look forward to doing it again next week. Good luck with your fantasy week, my man.
Thanks. Talk to you next week.
Appreciate it. That's David Fucillo, SBNation.com. Up next, it's a little news and notes, some injuries, how you feel about Ben Roethlisberger and his comments now, NFL top five power rankings, and Brady. How serious is the injury to the AC joint? He's back on the practice field. We'll find out. And then later on, we're going to ask Casey Smith the same thing. She's NBC Sports in Boston. She'll give us great insight on that. All that next. Ben Roethlisberger, next.
You're listening to The Sean Salisbury Show. Follow the show on Twitter at @SalisburyShow.
Welcome back in. All right, Ben Roethlisberger, after the game last weekend, said maybe he doesn't have it anymore. It came out yesterday, and I think it was a 93.7 or something on a radio show in Pittsburgh, and said that he has the belief that he's one of the best that's ever done it, one of the best that's ever played this position, .. Let me start there before we get into the Ben drama and what's next. Is he one of the best that's ever played this position?
Yes.
Why?
He's been to 3 Super Bowls, won 2. His resume speaks enough in itself, just those 2 things right there.
Well, how are we labeling best? Because
Top 10.
No, I don't believe so. And even, if you look at this generation in particular, he's not in the top 3. I mean, you have Manning, you have Brady, and you have Aaron Rodgers.
You're talking about Peyton Manning, correct?
Yeah, Peyton Manning. All 3 of those guys have had better careers than Ben Roethlisberger. So I don't think he's one of the best of all time. If you're going to be one of the best, you got to be at least somewhere in the top 5. Ben Roethlisberger been a really good quarterback. He's not one of the greatest ever.
Segs?
No, I'd probably have him
top 20.
Yeah. I was going to say 15 to 20. Maybe he sneaks into like 14-ish. I don't know, just off the top of my head, but he's been a really, really good quarterback that's put up some really good numbers and had some MVP-type seasons. But like Barrett said, there's been, I would say 4, because they also throw in Breeze.
Yeah, Drew Breeze, throw him in there.
But it's also not shocking to me that we're starting to see him tear down a little bit. I mean, look at
the
hits.
He has no commitment in the offseason either. Well, it's not just the hits. He doesn't commit himself to get in shape in the offseason. That has a lot to do with, trust me, the greatest players I've ever been around committed in the offseason. Look at Alex Smith, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady now. Look what they're doing with – you got to be lucky in football, too. You got to be a little lucky not to take the season-ending or career-ending type of hit. You just do. One thing I could tell you, a couple things about Ben Roethlisberger. One, we all know he's a drama queen. He's the NFL's equivalent to LeBron James. He just is. That's him.
Except super, not as good.
Yeah, but superstar, but 2 Super Bowls and a lot of numbers. He's a Hall of Famer. He will be wearing a mustard-colored jacket. So we got to consider him. The fact that we've just got barely over 200 guys ever, and he's going to be one of them, then Ben Roethlisberger is a hell of a player. Most underrated extender of plays we've ever had in this league, because he looks like he's awkward and gawky and looks kind of out of shape and gooey and then makes plays. So he's been spectacular at that. He's played big in some big games. His game has fallen off. Those are the facts. Now, Willie, there's a chance this week he'll go out and rip 420 and throw 4 touchdowns. He's got that in him. With that offense, he better. But his game has fallen off. And his ability to move, he doesn't quite step out of the things he used to step out of, mm-hmm. if you watch. Yep. He doesn't quite throw on time like he used to. He doesn't quite anticipate like he used to. And quite frankly, the ball doesn't get there quite like it used to. Capable of a game or 2 or 3 or 8? Yeah. Capable of getting them to the AFC Championship? Absolutely. But to this day, I've never, ever been around an athlete or played with an athlete or in a locker room and had one on the field that had one toe out the door and played his best football, ever. Once that kicks in, then you're just playing to get by. And I'm not saying he doesn't love the game. Maybe he still does. I don't know. The drama in the locker room doesn't really bother me. I see guys fighting and bickering and clowning with each other and talking nonsense to each other all the time. I actually believe that team needs it. But it's every week it's something. Le'Veon Bell wants the ball more. Ben, and I can understand why, while he's part of the problem when it comes to drama, he also has to babysit at times, as does Mike Tomlin, because it's full of divas. Doesn't make him bad. It's just a fact. So Ben Roethlisberger's one heck of a football player, but I do believe he started to fall off a little bit in his game. And I think it's important to recognize that if he does not play well, even though their defense is playing lights out, they can't win a Super Bowl. No matter how good – Landry Jones didn't win in your Super Bowl. And Ben can't play like he did last week or, quite frankly, like he has this year and done it. Now, 3 weeks from now, you can say, Ben's back. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to see many more years of him doing this, although he is a Hall of Famer and he's been one of the best we've ever had, meaning top 20 guy, of course.
How much more time are you giving this team? We've been saying since right after the preseason, well, they're not in football shape yet. They're going to get it together.
Judging,
how much more time are you giving
judging
them?
From what I've seen from the AFC – this year, I got a weakness on every team but Kansas City. And the one weakness they had with Eric Berry out, they've overcome it. Patriots, major weakness, more than one. Offensive line, defense. They do have Brady. Go around the AFC teams. Denver Broncos, do you trust their quarterback? Oakland Raiders, they can't do anything without their quarterback. Tennessee Titans, Mariota can't stay on the field. Jacksonville, Bortles is your go-to. I mean, you go down the list. The truth is right now, they're still a favorite to end up in the AFC or close to it. The Patriots and them and the Chiefs, they're still it. Broncos are going to hang around. The Jacksonville Jaguars might hang around. But when you look at their roster alone and the way their defense is playing, giving up, what, just over 15 points, right around 15 points a game, it's become a strength for them. So when I'm not willing to sit here and say when we get to late January, Pittsburgh won't be playing. But number seven better play better. He better play better.
Yeah, but this is a complete embarrassment right now. And I put a lot of this on Mike
what
Tomlin.
What is? What part?
The drama. I mean, Mike Tomlin is supposed to be this guy that everybody
respects.
You're
shocked, though?
No, but this is worse than it's ever been for them. First of all, you had been after the game 2 weeks ago saying that he liked when Antonio Brown, or didn't like it, but he got it was out of passion. Then he goes on a paid radio spot and says that Antonio Brown is creating a distraction. This week, he says that the media calls out the media saying they're the reason this team has a distraction. And then the running back needs more touches. 2 weeks ago, it was Brown needed more touches. This week, it's Le'Veon Bell needs more touches.
They're the Seattle Seahawks of an offense.
Right. Well, Mike.
I mean, the constant talk.
Exactly. But Mike,
that's what they are.
But you have all this finger pointing with them. Like, Mike Tomlin's got to get this together. It makes no sense.
Does he, though?
Yeah.
Does he, though? Does he, though? Really? I mean, he can do it, but Le'Veon Bell can talk all he wants. If Le'Veon Bell
but
goes
how do these guys come out and keep saying stuff like this?
How do you stop them?
Well, at what point do you have some.
What are you going to do? Bench Bell?
No, but at what point do you have some sense of leadership on this team?
Well, it's a whole bunch of guys. They're scattered around.
That's why they had no chance in the AFC Championship game. Yeah, Bell goes down in that game, but there's no leadership on the field with that team.
I don't think leadership on that day had anything to do with it. I think they got beat by a better team.
Well, and the fact that they won't change their game plan against Brady.
I'm one of those. The leadership, you want it, you crave it. There's a whole bunch of guys that talk it. I'm going to tell you what will fix it. Ben goes and throws for 400, and they win two games in a row.
Yeah, but is that possible at this point?
Of course it is.
So he's going to light up the Chiefs for 400 this weekend?
I'm not saying the Chiefs. I'm saying he's capable of doing it. Yeah. I don't believe he's going to do it against the Chiefs. But you're telling me he's not capable of it? I've seen him I've seen him rip 500-yard games off twice in his career. He's capable of it. Do I think their leadership in the locker room prevents Ben from throwing a curl route on time? Absolutely not. Leadership at times in this, once you hit the field, leadership's overrated. The week leading up to it, it's not. This team's dysfunctional and has been for a while. But they're so talented, you can't tell me they can't beat Kansas City this week. They can. They're capable of it, sure.
I would be pretty surprised
beat
them this week.
But if they do beat them and we walk in here, then what are we going to say? If Ben throws for 330 and three touchdowns, we're going to say leadership all of a sudden woke up and Mike Tomlin now has control of the leadership? It's not getting fixed. What's going to fix it is them winning in spite of the dysfunction. Like the Cleveland Cavaliers, like the teams that have dysfunction. Seattle's dysfunctional. They just find a way to rally around it and win. If Pittsburgh does, they still got to be a favorite in the AFC, but Ben's got to play better. To Tom Brady, I've had the AC thing that he's had, an AC joint. It's in his non-throwing shoulder. I understand that pain. He's practicing again. Wonder how severe it is. Now, I could tell you, even more so than the Pittsburgh Steelers, if Brady's injury or if he couldn't play and now he's going to play, this team's in they ain't overcoming that no matter how good Jimmy Garoppolo's been for six quarters.
Well, yeah, and the good thing is it's on the other shoulder, and the other component to this is he missed one day of practice, okay? So,
I'm not worried about it.
No, I see all over the place today, like Pro Football Talk's got a headline, Brady's age is finally catching up with
him. No, because they're stupid by saying that.
No kidding, but this is all over the place the past couple of days.
They want Pro Football Talk, what do they want?
Right.
They want Colin Kaepernick to replace Brady?
He's got a shoulder sprain on his non-throwing shoulder. If the Patriots don't make a run this year, it has nothing to do with Tom Brady. It has everything to do with the ineptitude of the defense.
And their offensive
line
is horrible.
It doesn't shock me that he has a hurt shoulder. He's been sacked 16 times already this season.
And hit about 800 more.
But here's the other thing. This is what I know about Brady. He's averaging 25 more passing yards than anybody else in the league. He's completing 68% of his passes. It's not an issue.
But I got him as the offensive player of the year.
He plays in the NFL. Guys get nicked up because Brady has a shoulder injury on his non-throwing shoulder. It's all of a sudden his age.
17, believe me, that injury comes from a hit or falling down. I've had it. It happened to me.
So it's not because he's 40.
No, it has nothing to do with his age.
That's what I'm trying to say.
He comes down, and he's thrown 11 touchdowns and one pick. He's thrown for almost 1,800 yards. I'm not saying pro football. People to suggest that. Haven't we seen this movie before from some of these constant, overly talkative idiots on TV? That's the first sign. Oh, my God. So because he's wearing a knee brace for the last 5 years, does that mean it's the first sign of him getting old as he continues to carve up defense? If the Patriots don't make it, it ain't going to be unless he hurts it worse and can't play. Brady's not going to be the reason. Neither is 40 years of age. It's absurd.
No, it's garbage. And the other component to all this is Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, they're the ones that should be accountable here. They got to figure out their defense. It's not about anything.
Well, I'll tell you what else needs
Tom
to be
Brady.
Accountable. And one thing about it, and one thing I know about Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick, they don't tackle anybody. They don't get penalized with anybody. Who's responsibility and accountable? I'm always tired of it also. Oh, it's the coach's fault. I still have yet to see, since I've been covering it, I never saw John Fox drop back and throw a pass yet. Now, they got to get their teams ready. I'll tell you when you know it's a coach's problem. Penalties, offside, all those disciplinary mental things. It ain't Bill Belichick. Matt Patricia didn't just forget how to teach tackling. If you're out of position and you're not getting lined up right, coach. If you're missing
but
tackles,
that is a problem with
that.
That
big time.
Yeah.
And so you start to look, but the responsibility also falls on, is Gilmore going to quit holding? Is Malcolm Butler going to catch an interception? Is the pass rush going to get to the quarterback? Are they going to stop the run? All those things. There's a lot of accountability that goes on a bunch of players, not just on number 12 or Bill Belichick or Matt Patricia. They got to play better as well.
Right, but couldn't you also suggest that since Belichick's also the GM of this team, we've seen a turnaround in pass, but Chandler Jones, I get they won a Super Bowl last year. He's a really good player with Arizona. Jabal Sheard, he's a really good player with Indianapolis. You let him go. Even a guy like Jamie Collins,
yes.
Really good player. I get all those things and you won a Super Bowl, but wouldn't you say if they had some of those guys still
yep.
on the team, it'd be a lot better.
But I've also seen them make a million of these moves that have worked better for them.
No,
he's
I
entitled
have
to miss once in a while.
No, I have too. I'm just saying, and the Gilmore contract, if he doesn't pick his game up,
well,
that's going to come
under scrutiny. At the end of the year, if this works out and keeps being like
I'm
this,
I'm with you. I'm not right
talk about
off.
It. Let's go real quick. We got to roll through. We've got about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. Top five power rankings right now. We got that? Robin, start. Start with five real quick. Give me one reason why.
I still have the Broncos in it. I know they didn't play that a bye week, but I'm still excited about that defense. And their run game finally got going.
Okay.
I put the Patriots because Brady's one of the top three players in the NFL right now.
Segs?
I have the Falcons coming off a bye. That offense is still really dangerous.
I put the Patriots. Well, I had a hard time finding five. Thought about Denver. I trust the quarterback more. This is a quarterback league. To four, I'll take the Patriots at five.
I have the Panthers for two straight weeks. Cam Newton is stoned for over 300 yards and three touchdowns. And that's two impressive wins in New England and in Detroit. So they're finally clicking.
Panthers. I have the Panthers, too. They're 4-1. I cannot believe how well Cam Newton's playing right now.
Yeah, I have the Panthers. I mean, just the way Cam played the last 2 weeks, you just got to put him in there for now.
If you want 2 weeks, the body of work still off. One more week, and I'll have him in my top five. I got Atlanta there, and I'm not even sold on them. The South is up and down. I got one more week of Cam, and I'll start to believe that this team actually is making a move. Three.
I have the Packers. I'd probably have them a little bit higher if I trusted that defense a little bit more, but Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind.
I put the Eagles at number three. The only thing that concerns me is I want to see them beat a good team there. Opponents' records 5-14.
I put the Packers just because I don't want to put the Packers too.
Okay, I put Philly three, and I think Philly could be the best team overall in the NFC right now. Love the way they play defense and love the quarterback to two.
I got Eagles. They've won three straight. Wincy, the knock on him was he needs to get more comfortable throwing the deep ball, and that's exactly
Star.
What he was doing. They're racking up touchdowns. They're racking up rushing yards. I like this team.
Star, man.
Two for me, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. He's on one of those streaks. 10 touchdowns, one interception in his last three games.
I have the Eagles. Wincy, you just said it. He's turning into a star in front of our eyes.
I got the Packers at number two because the Packers are in the NFC what Brady is the AFC. When you got those two quarterbacks, I got to keep you in the top five for the most part. Number one?
Chiefs, obviously. I mean, yesterday we did our Offensive Rookie of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, MVP, and most of us had a Chiefs player in all of those categories.
Only one team's undefeated, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's the Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs are doing everything right. No weakness right now. We'll see if anyway somebody can expose it. Hasn't happened yet. There's the power rankings. Good, passionate talk about football up next. Players-only meetings. Puh. On the Wrath of Sean. It's the Sean Salisbury Show. It's BN Sports and SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to the Sean Salisbury Show on SB Nation Radio. It's time for the Wrath of Sean.
When in doubt, have a players-only meeting. Those usually work. Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys, and we can get into why. Jerry Jones with the ultimatum. If you don't stand during the national anthem, as if anybody was going to do it on Jerry's team anyway. If you don't stand during the national anthem, you're gone or you're not going to play or you get benched, all that stuff, okay? The threat. And so the players have their players-only meeting. Let me tell you what goes on in a players-only meeting. Now, if they win their next game, by the way, the 2-3 Dallas Cowboys, you hope that players-only meeting, you talked about X's and O's as well because you aren't any good right now. So I hope X's and O's were part of that meeting to solve what's going on the field. And if we had as much dedication to how we're going to handle the kneeling and holding our helmet or standing and holding our helmet during the national anthem, during that players-only meeting, maybe you'd have a better chance right now to be chasing down the Philadelphia Eagles. But I'll say this about players-only meetings. You know what they do? You get in there and it starts out, yeah, everybody's empty in the bucket. We care about this. We care about this. Because I assure you not all 53 guys are on the same page. Not even close. Not only with the issue they met for, any other issue. It's a locker room with all kinds of different personalities. Players-only meetings don't mean squat. By the time it's over, you've hurt this guy's feelings because he's sensitive that you called him out. And then you called the other guy out and you said, oh, you're great. He's sensitive because you didn't say you had to do this. And before you know it, the players-only meeting has turned into we need a players-only meeting to overcome the only players meeting we just had because players-only meetings suck and don't work. It becomes a complaint fest, and what are we going to do? And you never walk out of there on the same page, ever. And my favorite thing is when you have a players-only meeting and coaches aren't there, once again, you alienate somebody. Players-only meetings are the biggest joke in sports when it comes to what goes on in the locker room. You know how you solve it? You go win. Take care of your X's and O's. And, oh, by the way, on this wrath, I can tell you this. Everybody talks about the reason the NFL wants players to stand and Jerry Jones is because sponsors and money. Yeah, bottom line is money. Isn't it for the player, too? Because if you really want to stand your ground and Jerry Jones tells you you can't stand or can't kneel, kneel. Test him. It's your wallet, right? It's your career. If you're really going to stand and be united, stand up and do it. Show him what you got. Call him on it. Here's what I know about most players and money. When an owner gives them the ultimatum, they don't have the guts to let somebody get into their pocket. When the Cowboys tee it up again, nobody's kneeling.